name is Elizabeth, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are not smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restroom exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have John D. and Ebony. I will read the first paragraph on page 60, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. Page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Your turn.
Let it go. I'm not used to speaking into a microphone. Let me get comfortable here. I'm John, I'm alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Three pertinent ideas. I'm a hard case. You know, I had to do a lot of drinking and drugging to find my way into these rooms. And I always fell back on self-will. And it seems like the story for me always seems to go that I have to hit a wall. I have to find some place of real deep emotional, physical, psychological pain where I'm willing to do something. And that's what happened to me this time. I've been around recovery for a long time. I drank a lot more than I recovered. I've been in recovery now about 2.5 years. I've been sober for about 1.5 years. I hadn't had a drink since the 22nd of April of 16, but there was a little event involving some stuff the dentist gave me that my sponsor told me not to get, and I had to reset my sobriety date. But we learned these little lessons. God found me. I was a retread when I came back, and I ran out of options. I got to a place where I was legitimately suicidal. Not like the suicidal that I can sometimes be, where I just want you to give me something so I'll go away. And I came to a place where it was either die, and I didn't know what to do. I thought I was gonna die, and I just fell down on my knees, and I said, help. and I didn't know who I was saying it to or what I was going to say, because at the time I would have told you I was an avowed atheist, and not even an argue with you atheist kind of person, but a, you know, just didn't care atheist. We're all going to die. It's all good, you know. And but I had to drink to believe that. So one night I fell down on my knees and I said, please help. And, you know, it says in the book, sometimes a very great one might be felt right away. I paraphrase, but it's close to that. And I did. I could breathe. I breathed for the first time in a long time. And a lot happened that night. And I went to an AA meeting soon thereafter. Because the week before, a buddy of mine said, I really think you ought to go to an AA meeting. I'm like, I don't need that stuff. But, you know, I found my place. I found that place where I could not go on. And I fell down. And I said, please help. And I found a higher power. So, thank you.
Thanks for sharing. Hi, I'm Ebony. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ebony.
To get the whatever qualifications out the way, I have not found it necessary to take a drink since Friday the 13th, November 2015. I do have a sponsor. I have a new sponsor. I do service work. I have a position with the intergroup, and I do sponsor other people. I take them through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I say all of that because if anyone has a similar experience as I do of big book dumping, as some people like to call it, by the time I get to this paragraph or these pertinent ideas, A, B, and C, I've done a lot of reading. And if you would have asked me what step I was on, I would have probably thought around page 60, I'm probably halfway through the steps. That's not the truth. The three pertinent ideas, it takes a lot for an alcoholic like me to understand the true nature of my malady, to understand what it means for me to be an alcoholic. You know, so when I read part A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, first I had to learn what the disease of alcoholism truly was. I walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I had all types of old ideas. An alcoholic is someone that looks like, or somebody that does, when it all boils down to, when I start drinking, I cannot stop. And when I did try to stop, I never stayed stopped. And it took a long time for me just to understand that part. And then throw on top of it the mental, the physical, and the spiritual part of this malady. That was a whole different set of ideas that I had no clue I suffered from. I just thought I drank too much and I had a couple of problems in my life, but you know, if I slow down, these problems will go away. And the further I get into We Agnostics, I start to see, and it's a really painful thing, that for me, my experience was when I stopped drinking, life got worse. When I stopped drinking, I could feel those bedevilments. I felt more uncomfortable in my skin. I felt angrier quicker. I was more irritable. I was more restless and discontent. I had to learn those things. I had to learn about my condition before I could admit to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And then when I get to see that God could and would if he were sought, that's the last thing I wanted to hear when I came to AA. I did not come to AA for God. I'm just going to put that out there. I did not come for prayer and meditation. I definitely did not come here to find a relationship with God as I understand him. But I'm grateful that the freedom Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. And I'm grateful for sponsorship and someone being able to share their experience with me so I didn't have to come up with all of these new things, because I would be drunk right now if I was taking myself through the steps. Believe me, I tried. I tried to take myself through the book. I tried to do all of those old ideas, and nothing worked for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Ebony.
Thank you. We now continue on page 60. Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Excuse me. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements were only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, The show will be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life will be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite vigorous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest, and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
Still John, still alcoholic. I was broken by alcoholism. I was broken by putting chemicals in my body. And I came to a point where I was whipped. They say that a lot in the book. You were whipped, or you were, I can't remember the other little quaint old-timey saying that. But you know, my butt was kicked. And I had never surrendered anything. Everything I'd ever let go of my life had claw marks in it. And I got to this place where I wish I could remember the line from the book, but it says we've been beat into a state of reasonableness by alcoholism, you know, and that's what happened to me. I'd done all I could do, and I just wanted to be out of it. I just wanted to be free. And I went to my first meeting, and I knew how the thing worked. Y'all been telling me for years what to do. I just never did it. And like Ebony said, I'd gone through the, you got to read the, you got to do the steps, man. I was 1, 2, 3 drink, 1, 2, 3 drink, the A waltz, you know, and that's the way it happened in my life. And 1, 2, 3 fire your sponsor, 1, 2, 3 fire your sponsor, you know, get a new one. And I was so afraid of writing that stuff down. It comes in the fourth step. So I got a sponsor at my first meeting, and it wasn't the first, probably the third meeting. But I was on fire. You couldn't scare me out of the rooms at that point. It took a couple weeks before I started really getting really afraid of you guys, and because I was terrified there at that point. I did these things immediately because I knew that if I didn't, I was probably going to end up. And I've shared this a lot with folks. Sometimes you get a little glimpse of what the future might look like, and I got a little glimpse, and I saw myself walking down Laskin Road in the rain with a backpack looking for something to steal. You know. I don't want to die like that. I don't. And I don't want to put my family through that. I don't want my kids to, I don't want, you know, I'm self-centered. I want people to show up at my funeral and miss me. And it was not going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. And so I showed up here, and I got me a big book, and I started reading it like crazy, you know, because I was gonna get it all at once like we do. And I got my sponsor, and he stopped me, and this guy's a great guy. He's not my sponsor anymore. I have a different sponsor now, but he stopped me, and I asked him if he'd be my temporary sponsor. And he said, I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, all right, you can be my sponsor then, right? I said, when can we start on the steps? He's like, let's start now. he goes, are you powerless over alcohol? Is your life unmanageable? I'm like, yep. He goes, do you believe there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity? I said, yep. He goes, are you willing to turn your will and your life over to that power? I was like, yep. He goes, good, let's start writing step four. And it took me 7 months, but I did it. And it was like 45 pages long. I've been around. I'm 50 this year. So, but that was kind of the process for me. I've never been a real methodical person. I just did what feels good. I did a lot of what feels good, and a lot of it was bad for me. I showed up here, and it felt better to do these things, and I just did them, and I did it. I was told. Until I started getting a little more sober, and I'm starting, that's not a good idea, but, you know, I'm learning to listen, so thank you.
Thanks. One of the most irritating and annoying suggestions that I got in early recovery, and I probably feel that way, it's because it's one of those things that I learned the most from, was to rewrite step 3 in the big book in first person for me. And so I would go through, and for example, the first requirement is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And on this basis, I am almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. That was always my excuse to get out of trouble. Or like, I'm hurt because I tried to tell somebody what to do because I know better than them. And if only they did what I told them to do, then things would turn out right. But the problem is, you know, out of the 10 people I told what to do, if only 9 people did it right, the way, and usually the only right way is the exact way I say, wearing the clothes I picked out at the time and location that I've set, that will make me happy. But that rarely ever happens in my life. And, you know, it took a long time for me to understand this, because I remember walking into my first meeting and seeing those posters with the 12 steps on them. And step 3 was like, okay, made a decision, check mark. I thought of this as just one of these checklist type of ideas. And then I get into the big book and I get into step work and working with another alcoholic, and actually going through my life and picking out instances where I have been ramming my will through not only my life, but everybody else's around me. And the problem with that is I had this idea that I had to prove to the world, I had to prove to the world that I was important. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to prove that I was good enough. I wanted to prove that I fit in. I wanted to prove that I was perfect the way I was. I needed to prove that I deserved the love. I needed to prove that I had the attention. And the only way I could prove it usually was by forcing my way to being the best. And that never really worked out well for me. And so when I read this and I think about the actor and playing different roles and different parts, first of all, part of my spiritual malady for me is I'm not comfortable with Ebony. I'm not comfortable with other people. I have defective relationships with people around me. And if they're not defective, the ones are... My definition of friendship before I came to AA was a mutual agreement to use each other. That defines the type of person I was before Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kind of laugh and cringe at the same time when I say that, but that's my truth. And so as I read this and I think about what's so wrong with me being self-willed, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not really hurting anybody. And that's always my problem. I like to justify and rationalize my actions. There's nothing wrong with it. But the problem is I could not live with those feelings that were caused by my actions. And I would always feel like, something's wrong. Why is so-and-so mad at me? Or why isn't this happening? Why isn't this working? And the further I go into this, and the more I had someone explain it, and I could see it in my life, sometimes I did have the right reasons. I hate the word motives, too. Usually the things that mean the most to me, that teach me the best lessons, are the things I hate the most, too. I hate the word motives, because I had a sponsor who would always ask me, what are my motives for doing something? Today, I was irritated where I am because I like to be in control. I like to set schedules. I like to have plans. And I thought it was hilarious that I was coming to this meeting to speak on step 3. Because nothing is going my way and as I planned today. And I'm irritated and I'm restless and I'm not discontent only because of the third step, only because I have faith that this too shall pass and things will fall into place. You know, I thought it was one of these things that once I did the third step, these behaviors would disappear and these consequences will disappear in my life. But for me, self-will is my default. That is what I automatically wake up in the morning in. I wake up in self-will. What do I need today? How do I get it? What do I have on my checklist? What does my schedule say? And as soon as something doesn't go the way that I've planned it out, I get sore and I get upset. And then I remember, I'm not in charge anymore. How do I reset my day? And you know, that's not what I came in here for. And the fact that I'm able to catch those things here and there lets me know that it is truly spiritual progress and not spiritual perfection. Thanks.
Thank you.
We now continue at page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come on very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? He is not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can to get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
Yes, I am a producer of confusion rather than harmony. This really good, just in the interest of forthrightness, I'm a double winner. And this stuff hits home so hard for me. You know, it's so easy just to be what people want you to be. It's so simple just to make people happy so they'll like me, you know. And I'm finding in my life, the cool thing about, there's kind of a good swing back from that. The cool thing about being a people pleaser is that if you ever get to a point where you can let go of the outcome of being a people pleaser, you just turn into a nice person, you know. It's not a sure thing because it goes back and forth. But one of my things was I never could see past other people's shortcomings. You know, it was a real struggle for me, and it still is sometimes. On the way over here, my lady friend was driving the car, and. Ooh, she made a turn that I was very uncomfortable with. I was on the passenger side, so I was the one going to get T-boned. And but, you know, thank God for the 10th step, because I already took care of that. But it happens, and it happens throughout our day. And you know, on the way to I'm not really used to talking in front of people very often. I have kind of moderated my southern accent for y'all tonight. I hope you notice. I'm not usually like redneck gibberish just coming out of me. So, but I was a little uncomfortable, and I was trying to pray, and I was trying to relax, and you know, sometimes you just have to wait for things to happen, and you know, for me, it requires on a daily basis that I take these things on. Because of my own accord, of my own self-will, I'm not going anywhere. You know, that's part of understanding that there is a God that I've turned my will and my life over. I heard a guy share, will in life is like a really big thing. You look at that, that's a pretty encompassing statement. You start to break down what will is, you know? Life is everything. There's, like, if you look in the encyclopedia under life, there's like an 18-page article, you know, it's ridiculous. Y'all still have encyclopedias? I don't even know. But Will, a guy said something in a meeting, and it hit home for me. It really, he said he heard a guy share that your will is your thoughts, right? So, okay, I've got an idea of what my will is. My will is my thinking. And, you know, being a reader and a seeker, and I put this stuff together, you know, and I talked to some people about it to make sure I was right, or at least I was on the right course, that something's good about this. And it seems like if I turn my thinking over to God and keep my thoughts as directed towards my higher power as I can, then I'm going to end up with my actions and my words coming out driven by that. And then, you know, you get your view leads to your thoughts, which leads to your words and your deeds, which leads to your character over time. You know, I want to have that higher power character. I want to be driven by that. And it never has been that way in the past. Because the things that that we were talking about in the reading, that's just life for a lot of people. You know, get ahead, get what you can. You know, it doesn't really matter who you hurt that bad, as long as you keep a couple people close to you. If you look out there in the world, the message is so different than what we hear here. And I never could let go of that message. And, you know, once I got to a place where I didn't really have a choice but to let go of that message, then I could start to get some of what you had. Then I could start, man, I can hear a guy tell me that my will is my thoughts. And I can change my thoughts. I can pray to have my thoughts changed. I make it a practice to fall down on my knees and pray to a higher power I do not understand frequently, and usually a couple times a day, and if not more. And I even, my little thing lately is I try to pray on the 11s. You know, every time the clock hits 11 after the hour, sometimes it'll be 15, sometimes it'll be 12, sometimes it'll be not even. But I try to make it a practice just to say, your will, not mine, be done. How can I best serve you today? And, you know, it seems like there's been a few results that have arisen from that. I see things happen. I didn't really want to believe in God, but my higher power has shown himself, herself, itself to me, has proven to me that good things happen when I seek her strength, his strength, that strength. So, thank you.
So I had a friend last night ask me what was coming up on my 10th step inventory. And the pattern lately, the defect that keeps popping up for me is efficiency. I like to be very efficient in life. And if the world around me is not efficient, I like to tweak other people's actions and their ideas so that it fits my efficiency schedule. And what's happening is I am causing all types of, I am just doing a fifth step. Okay, all right. I am just causing all types of chaos and frustration in my spirit. And the funny, like, Ebony today sitting here wouldn't think the things that are happening are big deals because I have a relationship with my higher power today, because I have a lot more faith than I came in here with. This third step was not an instant process for me. I didn't read and automatically say, okay, I have faith that this is going to work. But what I was able to do was pinpoint that, okay, what this book is saying so far, what I'm hearing from other people really resonates in my life. I definitely know what it feels like when I think people are retaliating towards me for no reason, even though I've given them a reason to retaliate. I can see where I did get the ball started rolling. I can see where I tried to manipulate people or lead them, because I like to say I'm a leader and not a manipulator. And it's true. Try to lead people in the right direction. And I can see where this confusion comes from. But what I'm learning more as we get into more of the solution part of this is that my job today is, like John said, is to turn my thoughts and my actions to the greater good. For me, at first, that's all I could do. I wasn't a big fan of God as I understood. I wasn't a big fan of it, so I turned my thoughts and my actions over to good. Does it feel right? I actually started listening to that inner voice inside of me that I used to ignore. You know, deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And that idea was something I tried to ignore for a long time. And so step three, a lot of it at the very beginning was, instead of feeling that chaos and that confusion, was doing what felt right. You know, I would hear, do the next right thing, and I would try to do the next right thing. And if I didn't know what the next right thing was, I always know what the next wrong thing is. So I would just not do that for a while. And that was the best that I could do. But as the days start adding up and as I get a little bit more comfortable practicing this step and these spiritual principles in my life, they take on such a greater meaning. You know, so the chaos and calamity that I cause in my life today, compared to the Ebony that walked in shaking because I was detoxing and withdrawing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I do not suggest, these problems I have today are minuscule, which lets me know that it's working, which in turn helps that faith in my life grow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We continue on page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
Yeah, that's been my experience, plainly. There's a lot, most of the stuff that's happened to me in my life, I can go back and now having, you know, life's lived forward and understood backwards. I can look back and I can relate to things that Bill says in the big book from 80 some odd years ago. You know, I look at my life, I promise you, I've always been a spiritual seeker, but I found substitutes for spirituality. You know, I thought reading, you know, the Tao Te Ching was gonna, you know, illuminate me somehow. But no, it's just like, pardon me for pandering, but simple actions. There are the little things that we do in our lives on a daily basis that illuminate our spiritual being, you know? And then more like Ebony said, there are things that we don't do, you know? You can't put alcohol and other chemicals in your body, you know, dry goods the way I did, and be close to God, or close to a higher power, or close to anything bigger than you, close to the group. There was no group. There was a locked apartment that I didn't leave until I blacked out, you know? And then crazy things happened. Made friends, went to restaurants, came to later. But these simple actions, they're the same across the board. And at the core of it is humility, which is the opposite of me. Because I am self-will run riot. I am self-centeredness, and I never, ever could see it. Never. I didn't realize that I was, you know, unduly asking things of you. I really believed it was my right that you give me what I wanted because I deserved it. And you look back at it, and it's like, sometimes I'm just like, who am I and what did I do? But, you know, that's the important thing about not looking back at it and getting morose. You know, the reason we do these simple actions is so we can look back at it and accept it for what it is, a part of the story that got us to where we're at today, to where we can be a bunch of us sitting in a room, you know, talking about the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a brilliant thing. I don't really think about the third step that often. You know, I love the 11th step. I'm in that place in my recovery where I'm always meditating and praying. But, you know, I do the third step every day. I do the first three steps every day, and it's almost required, right? You know, we got our spiritual condition has to be maintained in order for this thing to work. And if I don't do those things on a regular basis with some degree of consistency for this alcoholic, I'm going to end up thinking it's going to change very quickly. I'm that guy. You know, I'm going to start thinking people aren't treating me right. I'm not getting what I want. I have a good history of relapsing over I'm not getting what I want. Thank my higher power that I've started to understand that it's not about what I want. You know, that my actions, my role in this world, really, honestly, it's about service. It's about service to God. It's about service to others. You know, when I do these things, I am my happiest. When I can be of use to another human being and take myself out of it. I had an event happen today where a disturbed human being was very upset about the way they've been treated, and I'm in a service position. I'm a maintenance guy, right? This lady's really mad because her heat hadn't been consistently running, and it's been cold. And she's not really good at dealing with those feelings, right? She's not really good at sharing this stuff. My job today is to let her be who she is and do my best to help. Not to try and tell her how to feel, or to try and change her mind, or to try and con her into believing something that's not true. It's to be honest, it's to be forthright, it's to be loving, kind, and tolerant. You know? And I was those things. And I left the situation feeling better than if I had expected something out of it. If I had tried to own the situation. I just roll with it. And you know what? As far as I know, I hadn't gotten a phone call. I'm on call. I hadn't gotten a phone call, so her heat must still be working, and she must be okay. But you know what? She did have the presence and the place in her life because she has experience in recovery. And she let me know that she was in a place where she couldn't deal with where she was at, and that I probably needed to bail out. So I did so gracefully. But, you know, it's the process that works in my life of being in these rooms and hearing what you guys share, hearing what you put into my life that lets me go into a situation like that and let a little God come through me, just a little bit. It's all I needed. And I'm so grateful for that because, you know, you probably guessed I wasn't that guy for a long time. So thank you.
Moral and philosophical convictions galore. A glimpse of pre-program Ebony. I had rules for everybody outside of me, like women should not curse, that I make a living off of teaching other people right from wrong. Let's say that also. I make a living off of teaching people the right way to behave in public spaces. And I am queen. Well, I was queen. I'm a little less of a queen in that aspect, which is good, of telling children what to do and how to do it. And I am the person who would say, you know, do as I say, not as I do. Because I can tell you what's right and I can tell you what's wrong for you, but those rules don't apply to me. I am the exception to the rule at all times, you know. And I couldn't live up to these things that I wanted other people to do. I wanted people to be godly and love everyone. And I'm the same person that if I hold the door for you and you don't say thank you, I have something really smart and rude to say. I'm the same person who wants attention and I want people to invite me out and I want them to love on me, but I make it very clear, I don't like you, so leave me alone. I have all of these things that I think other people should live up to. But I always felt broken or that those things didn't apply to me because I'm too smart for this, or I don't feel the way other people feel, or, well, I'm a little bit different from other people. And that causes a lot of problems when I come in here and I sponsor myself and I read this and I get enough self-knowledge about my condition and say, okay, well, now that alcohol's gone, I just need to get rid of the self-centeredness. Back to, I need to get rid of it. I have to will my way through this. Just like willing my way through not drinking never worked, willing my way through not being self-centered or being selfless does not work for me either. I always go back to that default mode. I cannot manage my life when it comes to my behaviors with other people. I cannot manage my life when it comes to that first drink, but it took a while for me to understand that. You know, for me, this whole, I can't do this, I have to have God's help, it brought in a whole nother layer of what powerlessness meant to me. And I don't like being powerless. I don't like being out of control. I don't like not being able to solve my own problems. That's the mentality that I come in here with. And I read this and I think, okay, well, maybe if I go to enough meetings, or maybe if my sponsor is good enough, she can fix me so that I'm not self-centered, because it's my sponsor's job to fix me. my sponsor can't fix me. My sponsees can't fix me. My family can't fix me. Just like no one else could fix my alcoholism and my drinking problem. I have to have a power greater than myself, God. I feel comfortable saying that today. I had to have God help me with those things. Those are things that I cannot solve on my own. And it's crazy because as powerless as I feel in admitting that, a whole new sense of power comes when I know that I'm connected to something greater than myself. And I'll wait because the next paragraph is really good. Thanks. I always jump ahead, sorry.
Okay. We continue on page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom.
Yeah, the new and triumphant arch. That was one of my first sponsor's favorite things to say. Going through a new and triumphant arch to freedom. And I had no idea what he was talking about because I'd read it once. And, you know, you only read it once to start with, right? You don't go back and look for minutia. But I'm just going to stop. I don't have anything else on that. I'm going to let that go. Go ahead, Anthony.
I was taught, and now I believe, that all of the steps require some level of humility. And I had an old school sponsor who made me define words like crazy. She always gave me different words, point this out, look this up, what does this mean? And my favorite definition for me of humility was in the effect, this is just off the top of my head, but in the hierarchy of life, knowing that there's something above me. And when I read this paragraph, that's what I am reminded of. You know, it doesn't say I have to believe that God is in charge. It doesn't say that I have to believe that God is the principal and I'm the peasant. I don't have to believe any of that stuff. But that concept of that there is something greater than me, whether it be the greater good, whether it be God, which I can say today, that took a while, whether it be humanity or love, that there is something above Ebony. And as long as I can remember that in the hierarchy of life, I am not that important. I am not the end all be all. If I can remember that concept, it usually keeps me right size. You know, for me, I don't need to think I'm the bottom and I have to treat everybody better than me and run around making sure everybody's happy, but it also means I'm not in charge. I am right where I need to be. I'm no better than, and I'm no worse than the next man. And for me, that was a huge revelation. That is a huge change in my thinking. You know, so every time I read that, that's the thing I think about, because I don't think I play God. I never thought, I don't think I play God. I think I'm helpful. I think I know what's right for other people. I think I know what's right for me, and I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. The end.
Thank you, Edna.
All right, that was good. We're on our last reading on page 63. We are now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I will help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
Yeah, I really love the way they put the "we thought well before taking this step" after the prayer. I think that's pretty cool. I rewrote the third step prayer in the front of my book because I just resented King James English. I grew up Southern Baptist, and I didn't want to hear that stuff, man. I couldn't say the prayer for that reason, so I rewrote it in, you know, common English. And, you know, now if we say it in a meeting, I just go along with it, you know, y'all have kind of taught me a way that I fit in where I go. You know, if I happen to be at a meeting where I'm an addict, I'm an addict. If I happen to be at a meeting where I'm an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic. You know, for me, those lines blur and things, but we have a singleness of purpose in this fellowship. So I try to respect that. And I think it's interesting that I have to reword that prayer. Actually, I had a friend early in recovery, and we were talking about the third step prayer, and so it ended up happening, as things often do, that you go on the internet and start looking up third step prayers. There are a lot of different third step prayers out there, and I found some other ones that work really well for me. But I come back to this one on a regular basis. One thing, I've said it so many times now, I kind of memorized it, and there's some really important stuff in it. Basically, it's just about taking me down a little notch, and turning it over. And really, that's what this whole thing is about. It's the whole process is just turning it over and over. I find a new thing to turn over just about every day, and then I take something back. You know, I'm pretty bad about that. I find something just about every day that I need to control or manipulate. And as Ebony so mentioned, we take it back and then we give it up, and sometimes we notice it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I'm not a person that notices. I didn't notice you. I sure didn't notice you guys. I didn't notice people. I noticed I had a need to put something in my body to make me feel different, because I could not stand being where I was at. I couldn't stand living inside me. And I could not stand the here and now. And you know, today I try to stay in the here and now. I try to be present with people. I try to hear where you're at, because you know, I'm trying to understand instead of being understood. I used to worry so much about being understood. I was so concerned that you know where I'm coming from because I'm right, you know. And now I realize, you know, let's let go of that. I'm trying to be right sized today, and I need prayers like this to keep me right sized. I pray frequently that God remove my defects, so that I can be a greater service to God and my fellows. And lately, I've been praying. I heard it come up that our personality defects are weapons we use to fight the world, right? So I've been praying lately that He take away my weapons that I use to fight the world, because we've ceased fighting anything or anyone. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. You know, I don't want to fight anymore. I fought so long and so hard for something that wasn't worth having. And then I come in here and I surrender just a little bit, and I start getting stuff that's great. I get you. I get you guys in my life, you know. And it's rare that I meet an AA and make a connection in AA that doesn't enrich my life in some way, shape, or form. I try to listen to everything folks say at meetings, you know. Sometimes you hear some crazy things, you know. I love, there was a guy one time I heard, he said, you gotta be cute like a kitten. And I stopped and I thought about it and I said, yeah, sometimes you do have to be cute like a kitten. That wasn't out of the big book. But, you know, I just try to hear, because I don't know when you're gonna save my life. You know, if I start picking and choosing who I'm listening to, and I still do sometimes, but I try not to. There's times, you know, not this again, man, again. But then if I stop and I think about it, when I was a newcomer and that person shared that thing, it was important for me. I needed to hear that. And probably I need to hear it again today if I'm taking exception to it. So, these things that I find offensive or whatever are becoming smaller and less important. And that's just y'all working in my life, the these and the thys and the thous. And when people say God or people bring up Jesus in meetings or stuff like that, I'm not a religious person, but I don't close the door on that. You know, if my higher power directs me towards that, I want to be open-minded. I want to see that come. I don't want to be caught in everlasting ignorance. I mean, I don't want to be caught in everlasting ignorance. I mean, I think it sounds like no fun whatsoever. It sounds a lot like hell. So, anyway, thank you for letting me share.
So this prayer, a couple paragraphs down, I like the fact that it tells me the wording is optional. Because when I hear prayer or meditation, I have the opposite reaction. I want to have the most beautiful language, and I want it to be flowery, and I want someone to hear me praying and be moved by all of these great words that I say, because I like to talk a good game and not follow it up with action. And so when I read this third step prayer, one of my favorite parts is that it tells me, so that victory over my difficulties may bear witness to other people. It's not about me going around and saying, like, look how selfless I am, and look how much service work I do, and look at me putting God first, and look at me doing all of, because that's me using my self-centeredness and manipulating the system yet again. What it is for me is when I, just to take it to the most basic level for me, when I walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if there's anyone who is new, and if I share and I'm talking about what I was like, what happened, and what I am like now, is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous being carried through whatever I share? Is it showing that something in here is working? You know, for me, that's how I bear witness to the work my higher power does in my life. I am a low bottom alcoholic. I lie, I cheat, I steal to drink. That is what I do without a program of action. And then I can come in here and I can share about lying, cheating, and stealing, and how I did a whole bunch of things that I did not believe would work, that I did not want to do, that I still do when it's cold outside or when it's raining outside, like yesterday, and I didn't want to go to a meeting, but I still did. When I don't want to pick up the phone, when I don't want to do service work, and somehow these things work for me. To me, stuff like that is how victory over my difficulties are bearing witness to something greater than myself. Because I came in here hopeless and desperate. And it was the people in these rooms that showed me, okay, well, I don't really do this God thing, but maybe I can do AA. I have faith that maybe AA will work. Maybe this hope will work for me. You know, where I am today is outside of these rooms. If someone were to look at me, would they be able to see through my actions? Is Ebony being honest? Is she compassionate? Is she tolerant? Are her actions actually showing the things that she's being taught to live? You know, one of my favorite lines in the big book is, the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. If I am living this, if I'm practicing these spiritual principles outside of these rooms, when I'm at work, when I'm with my family, when I'm outside in the streets or doing whatever, am I showing the good of my higher power? Am I showing the love and the tolerance and the kindness? And for me, it's I can't fake that stuff very long. I can fake it, but I can't fake it very long. And I can't fake it with a smile on my face often. A lot of times there's a lot of eye rolling and cringing. But for me, that is the hope that the third step prayer gives me. Because when other people were doing that prayer, I could walk in and say, maybe I can do that prayer too. It's not about the words. It's not for me. I love the rewriting of the prayer. It worked for me a lot. But for someone like me, the biggest change has been that when I talk to my higher power and I take other people through this step, I ask them to rewrite it as well. Because it's all about being genuine for me. The most genuine prayers are the simplest. Help, please, thank you. And that's always a good start. And I'm not gonna say I have this prayer memorized, but I have it memorized in my heart. I know what the concepts are, and it frustrates me sometimes, because once it's memorized in my heart, I can't unmemorize it, which drives me crazy, because that's why I catch this stuff that causes the chaos in my life today. I'm happy that for me, we thought well before taking this step. I'm happy that that's at the end, because I like to procrastinate. I like to, oh, well, the book told me I could think. The book told me I had time. But at this point, as soon as I do this, it's time. It's time to get to work. And it's time to get to serious work. I make a decision. Either I'm ready and I'm going to do it, or I'm not. You know, the original manuscript says, if I'm not convinced of A, B, and C, either reread everything or throw that book away. And I'm a firm believer in that. I had to be beaten into a state of reasonableness, too, before I did the third step. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. That is all for our discussion portion of tonight. Let us thank our speakers one more time. We now pass the seven tradition basket,
which I'm doing now. Thanks.
Okay. The seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup and central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Ralph. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Ralph.
The New Day Group in Virginia Beach at Woodside Shopping Center will be open from 5:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Christmas Day and New Year's Day. I'd like to bring a dish if you wish, but there'll be plenty of food there. There'll be a meeting every hour and a half. So come and fellowship with us.
Awesome. Thank you, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph.
My name is Aaliyah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Aaliyah.
Hey,
my home group, AA 101. We are having our anniversary breakfast, January 6th. Food and fellowship is at 10 a.m., and at 11 a.m., we will have a speaker. We're at Norfolk Centera Heart Hospital. Hope to see you all there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leah.
Are there any more AA-related announcements? No? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Hi, my name is Melinda. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Melinda. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jennifer.
Welcome. We're glad you're here.
Mason, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mason.
Hey, Mason. Welcome. Glad you're here.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Callie.
Hey, Callie.
Welcome.
Glad you're
glad
here.
We have literature available over there at this point. Please see me or any other home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the bud can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. One more time, we'll thank the panel. Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, we are all invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol up the street. They have great fish tacos, just throwing it out there. And I have a friend to volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
Hey, BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, BJ.
Thank you, BJ.
Let's close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Hey, David Francis, would you like to take us out?
Sure.
Cool. Thanks.
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.